नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 9 चैप्टर 4 चैप्टर एंटाइटल्ड अम्बरीश महाराज अफेंडेड बाय दुर्वास मुनि टेक्स्ट नंबर 69। उपायं कथयिष्यामि तव विप्र शृणुस्व तत् अयं ह्यात्मा विचारस्ते यतस्तं याहि माचिरम् साधुषु प्रहितं तेज प्रहर्तु कुरुते शिवम्। Translation and purport by His Divine Grace H.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation: O Brahmana, let me now advise you for your own protection. Please hear from me. By offending Maharaj Ambarish, you have acted with self-envy. Therefore, you should go to him immediately, without a moment's delay. One's so-called prowess, when employed against the devotee, certainly harms he who employs it. Thus, it is the subject, not the object, who is harmed. Purport: A Vaishnava is always an object of envy for non-devotees. Even when the non-devotee happens to be his father, to give you a practical example, Hiranyakashipu was envious of Prahlad Maharaj. But this envy of the devotee was harmful to Hiranyakashipu, not to Prahlad. Every action taken by Hiranyakashipu against his son Prahlad Maharaj was taken very seriously by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And thus, when Hiranyakashipu was on the verge of killing Prahlad, the Lord personally appeared and killed Hiranyakashipu. Service to a Vaishnava gradually accumulates and becomes an asset for the devotee. Similarly, harmful activities directed against the devotee gradually become the ultimate cause of the performer's fall down. Even such a great Brahmana and mystic yogi as Durvasa was in a most dangerous situation because of his offense at the lotus feet of Maharaj Ambarish, a pure devotee. So today we are reading from this 9th canto, 4th chapter. Before I begin to speak, I seek the blessings of all the senior devotees. Sada Gopinath Prabhu, Madhvacharya Prabhu, Gaur Gopal Prabhu, Sri Chaitanya, and all the assembled devotees. Today, in this section of the Srimad Bhagavatam, we see that Lord Vishnu is speaking to Durvasa Muni about how dear the devotee is to the Supreme Lord. So Lord Durvasa Muni, after when he released the demon by plucking out a bunch of hair from his head, so then demon started attacking Ambarish Maharaj. But in order to protect Ambarish Maharaj, Lord Vishnu released the Sudarshan Chakra. The Sudarshan Chakra killed the demon and it started chasing Durvasa Muni. So Durvasa Muni, he, in order to protect himself, He actually started running all over the universe. But then Sudarshan Chakra was just behind him. Then he went to Lord Shiva. First he went to Lord Brahma. But Lord Brahma said, I cannot help you because Sudarshan Chakra of the Lord is chasing you. And even Lord Shiva could not help him. But then finally he comes to Lord Vishnu. And Lord Vishnu is speaking to Durvasa Muni. He's saying that even I cannot actually help you because you have offended my great devotee. So only thing which can help you is you should actually go to Ambarish Maharaj and beg forgiveness from him. So in this verse, Lord Vishnu is saying, let me now advise you for your own protection. Please hear from me. By offending Maharaj Ambarish, you have acted with self-envy. So Lord Vishnu is saying to Dhruvas Muni that because you actually acted enviously towards Ambarish Maharaj, so you should actually go and beg forgiveness from Ambarish Maharaj without any delay. So in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in different places, Srila Prabhupada gives different definitions for asura, a demon. Like one place he gives definition of asura is, the word asura means asu, it's a combination of two words, asu and ramante. It means one is addicted to sense gratification, or one who enjoys bodily pleasure. So Hiranyakashipu was called as Asruk Priyam. Hiranyakashipu, after his brother Hiranyaksha was killed by Varahadev, Hiranyakashipu was, he said that, I will kill Lord Vishnu and I will drink the blood from the body of Lord Vishnu. So that's why Hiranyakashipu was called as Asruk Priyam, because he was addicted to pleasure and the bodily platform. Now another place, Prabhupada gives different definition of asura, taking from this verse from the Bhagavad Gita. I heard from Radha Gopinath in one of the Bhagavatam class. Prabhupada makes in the sixth canto purport, he says that asura, he says that people who are less than human beings but not called as animals, and who do not know what is to be done and what is not to be done, they are called as asura. People who are less than human beings but they are not called as animals, who do not know what is to be done, what is not to be done, they are called, is called an asura. And another place, Prabhupada gives another definition of an asura. In fact, this is from a verse from the seventh canto. So in that particular verse, it is described, although Prahlad Maharaj was born in the family of asuras, unlike the other asuras, Prahlad Maharaj was not envious of the Vaishnavas. In fact, when His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj was giving a lecture on this verse, he made all the devotees recite this particular sentence many times during the class. That unlike the other asuras, Prahlad Maharaj was not envious of Vaishnavas. The whole lecture, he spoke, basically he was again and again emphasizing this point, that when a person is actually envious of a Vaishnava, that means he is an asura. Unlike the other asuras, Prahlad Maharaj was not envious of Vaishnavas. That means if a person is an envious of a Vaishnava, it means he is actually an asura. So here, Durvasamani, we see that Durvasamani, he performed such great austerities, but because he acted out of envy towards a great devotee, Ambarish Maharaj, he is actually an asura, according to this particular verse in the seventh canto. So, in fact, this whole, one of the main theme of this particular pastime, one of the lesson which we can learn from this pastime is the danger of committing Vaishnava aparadha, dangers of offending a devotee of the Lord. So here, because Durvasamani offended Ambarish Maharaj, he could not be saved by anyone except Ambarish Maharaj. So his whole, Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, he writes in his book, he says that especially in Kali Yuga, the progress in spiritual life depends more on kripa than on sadhana. we can actually progress in our spiritual life more. The base, it depends more on the kripa or the mercy of the devotees than on our own sadhana. In fact, when you read the Nectar of Devotion, the Nectar of Devotion, when Rupa Goswami describes Bhava Bhakti, he says how this Bhava Bhakti can be attained. So Bhava Bhakti can be attained by two ways. One is by sadhana. Sadhana means executing the regulative practices of devotional service, and another is by kripa or the special mercy of the devotees. But one interesting thing is, if you read in the 17th chapter of the Nectar of Devotion, when Prabhupada translates in this Nectar of the summary study in the Nectar of Devotion, when he translates for sadhana, he says this Bhava Bhakti can be attained by two ways. One is by constant association with the devotees, and another way is by the special mercy of the devotees. So he actually translates sadhana as constant association with the devotees. So why does he actually translate like that? So Dhanadhara Maharaj explains, says that constant association with the devotees is actually synonymous with executing the practices of devotional service. Because when a person associates with a devotee, then he has to engage in the regulative practice of devotional service. He cannot, when you are in the midst of the devotees, we have to act in certain ways. Like we cannot act in a different way. So association with the devotees is actually synonymous with executing the regulative principles of devotional service. So in other words, even the sadhana bhakti we perform, it is actually a mercy of the devotees. Like as some devotees, when they were giving this Bhagavatam class, the Bali Maharaj pastime, like they were quoting Devamrita Maharaj's lecture, the Devamrita Maharaj was saying that even the morning program, the sadhana bhakti which are performing, that is actually the mercy of Srila Prabhupada. So that means, whether sadhana or kripa, both actually depends on the mercy of the devotees. So that is why Vaishnava apara, this apara, the topic of apara is very relevant, because when a person commits an offense, one becomes devoid of the mercy of Srimati Radharani. That is why apara is called as Radha Shunya. So that's why this topic of apara is actually very relevant, especially in Kali Yuga, because anyway we don't have so much of capacity to perform sadhana. Our mind is so flickering, like we can't, it's very difficult to focus on chanting the holy names, and our health is, so many health problems. So it's very actually difficult to perform sadhana properly. So our advancement depends more on the mercy of the devotees. And when a person commits an offense to a devotee, one becomes devoid of the mercy of Srimati Radharani. That is why the topic of aparadha is very relevant. And one of the result of committing the aparadha, the result, when a person commits an aparadha, even if a person continues to chant the holy name, that holy name will at most maintain one Krishna consciousness, and it will not nourish one. If the degree of offense is greater, then the very holy name or the very practice of devotions which he practices, that will actually make a person degrade. Like one devotee was giving the example that in Australia, sometime when people don't pay water bills, then they will still get water, but they will only get a trickle of water. Like once in 10 minutes, like few drops of water will come. So water is still coming, but then it's practically of no use. So similarly, when a person commits an offense, one may continue to practice devotional service, but he'll not be nourished by those practices. will not get nourishment. And of course, this topic is so huge. I just taken few points from different books. Another purport in the fourth canto, Prabhupada makes a very interesting point. At least I found it very inspiring. When Prithu Maharaj was giving his instructions to his citizens, Prithu Maharaj, he was actually first talking about the importance of taking to Krishna consciousness. Yat sevaya abhiruchis tapasvinam ashesha janmo upachitam malam diya. He says that by serving the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, one can be cleansed of unlimited contamination, unlimited sins. A person has performed an unlimited number of lifetimes. Ashesha janmo upachitam malam diya. And one becomes cleansed of unlimited amount of sins immediately. So Prithu Maharaj was telling about the importance of practicing devotional service. But in few verses later, Prithu Maharaj says, Majatu teja prabhavanna mahardibis titikshaya tapasa vidyaya cha dedipyamane jita devatanam kule svayam raja kula dvijanam. Prithu Maharaj is saying, in this particular verse, he is talking about the danger of committing offense to the devotees. He is telling to his citizens, do not ever exercise your power upon the Brahmanas and the Vaishnavas who have got qualities like tolerance, humility, austerity, because they are very dear to the Supreme Lord. So Srila Prabhupada says, Prithu Maharaj previously described about the importance of taking to Krishna consciousness. Now he is telling to his citizens about how one can remain steady in the practice of devotional service. So we hear actually hundreds and thousands of stories about how a person came to Krishna consciousness by the power of prasadam, by chanting Hare Krishna mantra, or by appreciating some devotee, or by being attracted to the deities. So many stories are there. But then, we may not hear any story about how a person has remained steady in the practice of Krishna consciousness. Because many persons may come to Krishna consciousness, but after some time may lose the initial taste, or a person may even fall down from the practice of Krishna consciousness. So what is the secret of remaining steady in the practice of devotional service? So Srila Prabhupada writes in this purport that in order to remain in the practice of devotional service, only thing is that one should not actually offend a devotee of the Lord. So that is why this topic of offense is very important. In fact, I was just reading an article by Prabhupada disciple Sotra Prabhu. He was actually making an interesting point, pointing out a point from the Bhagavad Gita. In the Bhagavad Gita 13th chapter, Krishna talks about this 18 points of knowledge. Amanitvam, Adambitvam, Akimsa, Kshanti, Rarjavam. So out of this 18 points of knowledge, one is the primary item. The other 17 are secondary items. So the primary item is Mayi Chananya Yogena Bhaktir Avyabhicharini. That is, unalloyed devotional service to the Supreme Lord. And the other 17 are secondary items. But he was pointing out that when Prabhupada is explaining in the purport, in each paragraph he explains about each item. But when he explains about this particular Mayi Chananya Yogena, he explains this particular primary item combined with the previous secondary item. That is, Nityam cha samachittatvam ishtanishtu upapattishu. That is, even-mindedness among pleasant and unpleasant events. He explains this item along with Mayi Chananya Yogena. So you are saying that Prabhupada could have explained this primary item and he could have explained all the secondary items in one paragraph. But then he is explaining this, the most important item of knowledge, along with the secondary item. Then he was making the comment, the reason is because there are two things, vidhi and nisheda. There is something to be followed, rule and regulation. So the most important item is unalloyed devotion to the Supreme Lord. But the other things are also important. So in order to emphasize on the secondary item also, so Prabhupada is explaining that along with the primary item. So both are important. So in the same way, there are two things. One is do's and another is don'ts. So when a person follows only the do's, and then if a person does not follow the don'ts, then one will not get the required result. That's why even the 64 items of sadhana bhakti, Rupa Goswami describes the first 10 items are do's, the 11th to 20th items are don'ts. And one particular item is offense, he dedicates a whole chapter for the offense. So Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, in his book, regarding the same point, he writes a very interesting concept. He presents a nice point. He says that sometimes when we see that great devotees, when they fall down from Krishna consciousness, many people lose faith in the process of devotional service and then they leave the process of devotional service. Suppose a devotee who has been practicing for 30 years, 40 years, suddenly he leaves the practice of devotional service and then he takes to his previous sinful life, then usually people lose faith in the process of devotional service. They think even such a great devotee who has been practicing for so many years, if they leave, then what is the use of me practicing? Certainly I will also leave Krishna consciousness after some time. So better let me leave now only. But then he says that when we see that some great devotees leave the practice of Krishna consciousness, it should actually increase our faith in the process of devotional service. And he explains how it is so. He says that invariably when you study the fall down of great devotees, it will be connected with some offense committed to some devotee. So because of that offense, he actually leaves. So he says that when a person takes to Krishna consciousness, initially when he follows the do's and don'ts, we see that a person is actually progressing, advancing in devotional service. So then we get actually faith in the process of devotional service. Well, see, he's taking to devotional service, advancing so much. And when a person falls down, he did not follow the don't. One of the don'ts is committing offense. So because he has not followed the don't, so he is not getting the required result. So that means he should again increase our faith in the process of devotional service. Just like suppose a person goes to the doctor. So doctor tells him, in order to get cured from the disease, you follow these do's, 1, 2, 3. And then you avoid these don'ts. So when a patient is following the do's and don'ts, he's seeing that he's actually getting cured from the disease. And after some time, he's following the do's, then when he stops following the don'ts, and he sees his actually health is degrading. So that should again increase one's faith in the doctor, because he's not following the doctor's instruction completely, that's why his health is degraded. So similarly, he says that when great devotees fall down, the reason is because of offense. So instead of actually losing our faith in the process of Krishna consciousness, it should actually increase in the process of devotional service, because it actually tells the effect of committing aparad. So, and another point about aparad is that Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, when a person commits an offense, that offense, especially committing an offense to a devotee of the Lord, that offense actually acts as a catalyst for adharma. That acts as a catalyst for propagating wrong philosophies. He says there are five kinds of adharma: vidharma, paradharma, upadharma, dharmabhas, and chaladharma. Of course, I will not discuss about the details of that. But the point is that when a person commits an offense, the result of that offense is he starts propagating new philosophies. Like sometimes we see that, like even in Vaishnava societies, suddenly a person starts propagating new philosophy, deviation from what Srila Prabhupada taught. Actually, the root of that is, actually he has offended some devotee. Especially some pure devotee, some great devotee. So because of that, that offense has led to actually propagating new philosophies. Like when Srila Rupa Kaviraj, when he offended a devotee, Rupa Kaviraj was practically on the stage of prema. So when he actually offended this pure devotee Krishna Thakurani, so initially the devotees could not perceive that he has actually fallen down. But then slowly he started propagating new philosophy. He started saying that only renunciants can be gurus. Those who are grihasthas, householders, they cannot act as spiritual masters. But actually in the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's line, like so many grihasthas like Advaita Acharya, Nityananda Prabhu, they were all spiritual masters. So he started propagating this wrong philosophy. Eventually he got, I think, leprosy, and then he fell down. So the point is that even we see that sometimes like people propagate philosophy like only Srila Prabhupada is the only guru. There cannot be any other guru. So there are many such deviations. People propagate such philosophies. But the root of that philosophy is actually, root of that deviation is actually committing an offense to a devotee. And another important point is about sin and offense. So when a person commits a sin, sin is basically, it is an assault on morality and on ordinary dharma or piety. When a person commits a sin, it is actually an assault on some moral principle or some ordinary dharma or breaking some or not following a pious activity. But offenses, it is basically an assault on sanatan dharma or eternal religious principles. So when a person commits a sin, that can be easily eradicated if a person performs atonement, if a person takes a devotional, the sin can be eradicated easily. But when a person commits an offense, the effect of that offense is very deep-rooted. It cannot be very easily eradicated. Like, the example is, in the case of Daksha Prajapati, Prajapati Daksha, he committed offense to Lord Shiva. In fact, I was just explaining this point that when he committed offense to Lord Shiva, actually when he came to the sacrificial arena, when everyone got up except Lord Shiva, Daksha Prajapati said, Shruyatam Brahma Rishayo me Sahadeva Sahagnaya Sadhu Nam Bruvato Vrittam Nagyanan Nachamatsarat. He said that, oh, all the great sages, Brahma Rishis, all the great demigods, all the fire gods, please hear that I am going to speak about the gentle manners of sadhus. And please know that I am not speaking this out of ignorance or envy. So here we see the result of envy or pride is, this particular anartha is such a thing that a person thinks that he is completely convinced that he does not have the anartha. So Daksha Prajapati is saying, I am not speaking out of envy or ignorance. Actually, you are speaking out of full envy and full pride. So, when a person has lust or anger, he at least becomes conscious, oh, I am having these wrong thoughts. But when a person becomes maddened by envy or pride, he is convinced that he does not have that anartha. So, Daksha Prajapati, he criticized Lord Shiva. So, later he actually realized the offense committed to Lord Shiva, and then he begged forgiveness to Lord Shiva. But even after begging forgiveness, so later when he was in his next birth, he actually offended Narada Muni. This episode comes in the sixth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So Srila Jiva Goswami says, Daksha Prajapati offending Narada Muni, this offense is actually result of the offense he committed to Lord Shiva. Then one may say, okay, he offended Lord Shiva, but then he begged forgiveness to Lord Shiva. And then Lord Shiva also forgave Daksha Prajapati. But still, how is it that the result of that offense is still being carried on to his next birth? In fact, his next birth was Daksha Prajapati offended Lord Shiva in the Swayambhu Manvantara, in the first Manvantara. So then, when he was born second time, he performed austerities for 3 Manvantaras. Then in the Chakshusha Manvantara, he offended Narada Muni. That is, I think, the 4th or 5th Manvantara. So one Manvantara is like 71 Divya Yugas, like such a long lifespan. But the result of that offense is still actually, he was feeling that result of that offense even in the Chakshusha Manvantara. So the reason, that is why sin is called as Duli Lepa, but offense is called as Vajra Lepa. That means, Duli Lepa means the mark which is when like dust particles come, when they actually present a layer. So that layer can be easily cleansed. But then when there is a mark in the stone, that cannot be actually easily eradicated. It takes a long time. So Daksha Prajapati, he begged forgiveness from Lord Shiva, but he did not get the favor of Lord Shiva. So because he did not get the favor of Lord Shiva, he did not get the anugraha of Lord Shiva, he still felt the reaction even in the 4th Manvantara. So Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj says, it is like, suppose a person steals a car from another person, and then later he repents for the mistake, and then he goes to the owner, and then he begs forgiveness from the owner. So please forgive me that I have stolen the car. The owner sees that he is begging forgiveness, so he also forgives him. So that is just one step. But actually what the person should have done is, he should buy another car and he should give the owner. That is like actually reinstating. So then he will get the favor of that owner. So similarly, says that when a person commits an offense and begs forgiveness from a devotee, so that is one step, but the higher thing is that one should actually serve the devotee and get the favor of the devotee. That is why when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told that if a person has criticized a devotee, he says that one should glorify the devotee with the same mouth with which he actually criticized the devotee. He does not simply say that, oh, because I have criticized the devotee, you should go and beg forgiveness from the devotee. So that is just a neutral stage, but he is telling about the positive thing. With the same mouth, one should actually glorify the devotee. That's like buying another car and giving to the owner. So that is the difference between begging forgiveness and getting the favor of the devotee. And another important point, yesterday I was reading a lecture of Gaur Govind Maharaj. He was quoting actually Jiva Goswami's commentary on this, I think the previous verse of this canto. He was making a point that when a person commits an offense to a devotee, the only thing is that he should only way to overcome is that he should go to only that particular devotee and beg forgiveness. If he performs other devotional service, that will not help. Just like if a person has a thorn in his leg, but if he is trying to remove the thorn from the shoulder, will his pain get relieved? He has to remove the thorn from the foot only. So similarly, if a person commits an offense to a devotee, if he chants extra rounds or does some extra reading, that will not help. He has to actually go to that particular devotee and beg forgiveness from that devotee. And especially this topic of offense, it may actually lead to the thinking that one may think that why does the Supreme Lord consider the offense committed to a devotee to be so serious? It seems that Supreme Lord is so selfish. Like he is favoring his men so much, his own men, that if a person commits offense to his devotee, then he feels like he is not doing any help to that particular person. It seems that Supreme Lord is partial to his devotees. He is also like any ordinary person. So one may think like that. So I was reading the second canto. So there, Bhujan Prabhu in his book, he quotes Sridhar Swami and he says, Krishna can be impartial to the whole universe, at the same time he can be partial to the devotees by the power of his Achintya Shakti. Usually in this world, when we are impartial, we cannot be partial. And when we are partial to somebody, we cannot be impartial. Usually when we are acting partially to somebody, like because we act because this person is favoring us, so we act partially towards that person. Because we are under the influence of the modes of material nature, that is why we are acting partially. But Krishna's partiality to his pure devotees, it is a result of his Achintya Shakti. It is completely on the spiritual platform. So he quotes two verses to support how Krishna can be partial to the whole universe and Krishna can be impartial to the whole universe and how he can be partial to his devotees. So Bhishma Dev, in his prayers, in the first canto, 9th chapter, Bhishma Dev says, Sarvatmana samadrusho hyadvayasya anahankrite tatkritam mati vaishamyam niravadyasya nakvachit. Being the absolute personality of Godhead, he is present in everyone's heart and he is equally kind to everyone and he is free from the false ego of differentiation. So therefore, whatever he does is free from material inebriety. He is equibalanced. So in this verse, Bhishma Dev is saying that how Krishna is like equal to the whole world. Whatever he does is actually free from any differentiation. He is equibalanced. Sarvatmana samadrishu. But in the next verse, Bhishma Dev is saying that how he is partial to his devotees. He is saying, Tatapyekanta bhuteshu pashya bhupanu kampitam yanme asum tejatas sakshat Krishna darshanamagata. He says, yet despite his being equally kind to everyone, he has graciously come before me while I am ending my life, for I am his unflinching servitor. So in this verse, how Bhishma Dev is saying that how the Lord is specifically kind towards him. So Krishna can be impartial to the whole universe and he can be partial to his pure devotees. So that is because of his Achintya Shakti that is completely on the spiritual platform, unlike our partiality to somebody which is actually on the material platform. So one should not mistake that that Krishna's partiality to be to his devotees to be on the material platform, it is actually in the spiritual platform. And in fact, there is another important point, like, so just like Srila Prabhupada writes in this particular purport, he says that service to a Vaishnava gradually accumulates and becomes an asset for the devotee, and similarly harmful activities directed against the devotee gradually become the ultimate cause of the performance fall down. So when a person commits an offense, then he falls down. When a person serves a devotee, he accumulates more and more assets. So this actually connection, this association or service to a devotee or the blessing of a devotee, that is actually the that will, because of that, a person will get the mercy of the Lord. So in the fourth canto, when the Pracheta, the sons of Prachina Bhargishad, when they offer praise to the Supreme Lord Vishnu, in one particular verse they say, Vayam tu sakshat Bhagavan bhavasya priyasya sakyurkshana sangamena sudushchukitsyasya bhavasya mrityor bishaktamam tvadyagatim gatasma. So Prachetas are saying, Vayam tu sakshat Bhagavan bhavasya. We have got the association of you, the Supreme Lord, because we got the association of your pure devotee for a moment, that is Lord Shiva. Because we got the association of your pure devotee Lord Shiva for a moment, Kshana Sangamena. Because of that, we actually got your association. And then they say, Bishaktamam Twadya Gatim Gatasma. Like, you are the supreme physician who can actually cure the disease of material existence. The physicians of this world, they can cure some particular disease for some time. But the real disease is the disease of material existence. So Lord is called the supreme physician, Bishaktama, because only he can cure the disease of material existence. But the important point is, Lord Shiva is saying, the Prachetas are saying, we have got your association because as a result of we getting the association of your pure devotee. So Prachetas, they performed austerities for 10,000 years within the water. And they are not saying that because we performed austerities, we have got your actually association. They are actually giving the credit of them getting the association of the Supreme Lord to the fact that they got the blessing of Lord Shiva. When did they get the blessing of Lord Shiva? 10,000 years back. Before they started performing austerities, they got the association of Lord Shiva and they got the blessing of the Lord Shiva, and with the blessing of the Lord Shiva they performed austerities. And then they got the darshan of Lord Shiva. So they are giving credit to that blessing and the association of Lord Shiva, which they received 10,000 years back, instead of the austerities they performed for 10,000 years for getting the association of the Lord. So that means, like, even when a person performs austerities, but if the first act, that is, if a person performs austerities without the blessing of the Lord or the devotee, then usually it may not give the required result. It may end in failure, or at most it may give only material benefit. But here Prachetas are saying that they are, because they got the association of Lord Shiva, they got the association of the Supreme Lord. And they received the association of Lord Shiva 10,000 years back. So they are remembering that, and they are actually saying that that is the actual result of we getting your association. So here we see, and when we compare Prachetas with Shaubari Muni, Shaubari Muni, he performed austerities within water for thousands of years. But because he actually ordered a superior Vaishnava, Garuda, because of this one act of ordering the superior Vaishya of Garuda, he lost all the credits to his austerities. Whereas Prachetas, because they performed austerities with the blessing of Lord Shiva, their austerities, it gave the required result, that is, the association of the Supreme Lord. So one may say that Prachetas are telling out of humility. We have got your association because we got the blessing of Lord Shiva. But actually, even if you read the words spoken by Lord Shiva, Lord Vishnu to the Prachetas, Lord Vishnu also says the same point. You got my darshan, you got my association because you got the mercy of my devotee Lord Shiva. So this actually establishes a very important principle. Only devotional service can actually lead to devotional service. Savai pumsam paro dharmo yato bhakti radokshaje ahai tuki apratihata yayatma suprasidati. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, when he translates, he says that the supreme occupational duty of living entity, the supreme dharma of living entities is actually sadhana bhakti, beginning with hearing and chanting, by which prema bhakti for the Supreme Lord is awakened, and which is not caused by anything other than itself. Ahaituki, he says, he explains the word ahaituki as, that means devotional service is not caused by anything other than itself. So this particular verse by the Prachetas, it says that austerities cannot lead to devotional service. Only the association of the devotees, only bhakti can lead to bhakti. So because Prachetas were conscious of this fact, that they got the mercy of the Supreme Lord, because they got the mercy of Lord Shiva, what they pray to Lord Vishnu is also association of devotees. When they are praying, Yavatte Mayayas Prishta Brahmama Iha Karmabi Tavat Bhavat Prasanganam Sangasyano Bhave Bhave. They say that as long as we are actually wandering in this material universe from one species to another species, as long as we are under the influence of material energy, please give your mercy that we are always in the association of devotees. So when Lord Vishnu hears this particular verse, he says that, okay, after all, you want to overcome the influence of material energy. So that means you want liberation. You want to become free from the clutches of material energy. If you want to get liberation, I will directly give you liberation. So you don't have to ask for the association of devotees. So then Prachetas, in the next verse, they say, Tulayama lavenapi nasvargam napunar bhavam Bhagavat Sanghi Sangasya Martyanam Kim Utashisha. They say that we cannot compare a moment of association with a devotee even to going to heavenly planets or getting liberation, or what to speak of getting some material opulences in this particular, in the mortal world. So here we see that this particular principle, that when a person gets the mercy of the devotee, or serves the devotee, and one gets the mercy of the Lord. I'll just complete with a few more points. And another point about Ambarish Maharaj, which I want to say is, here, Ambarish Maharaj, when he was attacked by Durvasa Muni, when he was attacked by this demon released by Durvasa Muni, he did not actually ask the Supreme Lord for protection. In fact, he did not even move from the place. In fact, the Supreme Lord gave his Sudarshan Chakra for Ambarish Maharaj's protection even before that. And he did not utilize that favor. So I was hearing a class of His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj. He was talking about Suruchi, this character of Suruchi in the Dhruva Maharaj's pastime. He was saying that Suruchi, when she understood that Uttanupad, that she is the favorite queen of Uttanupad, she tried to exploit that affection which Uttanupad had towards her by trying to chastise Dhruva Maharaj. He was saying that the tendency of human nature is to actually exploit others. So when we see that some particular person has affection towards us, we try to utilize that affection for our own purposes. Like so, when a person has connection with a person in the high governmental post, he tries to utilize that connection to get his things done. But great devotees, their nature is completely opposite. Like Ambarish Maharaj, Parikshit Maharaj, they had contact with the greatest personality, the supreme personality of Godhead, but they did not utilize that connection even for their own protection. Although they did not commit any mistake. But sometimes we see pure devotees who are saying that sometimes Srila Prabhupada would try to use the affection which devotees had towards himself, but for giving Krishna consciousness to them. Like Prabhupada would give cookies to the small children, and in this way he will win the heart of those children, or he will win the, by his affection he will win the hearts of even adults or other devotees. And so that when Prabhupada would say something, they'd be ready to do whatever Prabhupada say. Whatever Prabhupada would say. So Prabhupada used the affection which others had towards himself for giving Krishna consciousness to them. For their own self-interest. For engaging them in Krishna's service. Not for their own, and for his own personal benefit. So this is another quality of Ambarish Maharaj. And I'll just stop with this final story. I read this interesting story about offending a devotee of the Lord. In Mahabharata, there is one story comes when Yudhishthira Maharaj performed the Rajasya sacrifice. It's explained that after the Rajasya sacrifice is performed, he was supposed to get a particular result. That means, which is the proof that the sacrifice is performed properly. So the proof is that a bell should ring. The bell in the sacrificial arena, it should ring automatically. So that is the proof that the sacrifice is performed perfectly. But after the sacrifice was performed, the bell was not ringing. So they were like wondering, like, what is the, there must be some mistake. Because when they perform sacrifice, if there is some mistake, then it can actually give opposite results. So they were wondering that, what is the mistake we perform? So Lord Krishna said, all the persons who came to the sacrifice, they were not properly respected. So there was one particular Brahmana who came, one poor Brahmana, he was not respected properly. So then somehow Arjun came to know who that Brahmana was. He came to that nearby village. He went to the house of that poor Brahmana. So then he invited that Brahmana, please come again. We want to actually serve you properly. So then that Brahmana was not inclined, but then he felt, okay, I will get the darshan of Lord Krishna. Okay, he agreed to come. Then the Pandavas, Draupadi, they cooked a huge feast, and they served the Brahmana nicely. And then the Brahmana went. But even after that, the bell did not ring. So then this time they said, they again asked Krishna, what is the mistake we perform? Krishna said, one of the family members has offended this Brahmana. So then that time Draupadi came forward. She said, actually, I committed this offense to the Brahmana. So she said, when the Brahmana came, when they served a huge feast to the Brahmana, this Brahmana had a peculiar habit. So he would mix all the items together and then he would eat. So Draupadi thought, what an uncultured person. So she offended that Brahmana. So then they again called that Brahmana. They pleaded with him. And then they cooked an even bigger feast. And then they pleased him. And then finally the bell rang. So Bhaktivedanta Maharaj writes, says that, like, sometimes we may perform a huge elaborate arrangements We may make huge efforts, but then if Guru and Krishna are not pleased, then we may not get actually the required result, although the efforts we have performed is huge. On the other hand, even we might have performed small efforts, but if you are having this attitude of respect towards all, then although our effort is small, because Krishna is pleased, the result we get will be much beyond than much beyond than what we expect, beyond what the effort we have put. So that is why this actually topic of this topic of offense is very important. Because there are so many types of offenses: seva aparad, nama aparad, etc. So when one reads a list of offenses, one may think, oh, do I have to become offense conscious? One may think like that. And Bhaktivedanta Maharaj says that if a person is simply remains humble and grateful and always appreciating others, then he can never commit an offense. One does not have to worry that, oh, do I have to become offense conscious? So in this, I'll stop here. So I'll quickly summarize. So we talked about the relevance of offense in Kali Yuga, and we talked about the definition of an asura, who is actually envious of Vaishnavas, and we talked about the result of committing offense, and we talked that how when an offense is important, because in order to remain steady in the practice of devotional service, one should actually avoid committing offense. And it is when a person commits an offense, it becomes a catalyst for propagating adharma. Then we also talked about the difference between sin and offense. And we talked about how one may think that whether Krishna is partial, he is favoring so much as pure devotees. So, but Krishna's partiality is completely on the spiritual platform. So I'll stop here. Grantharan Srimad Bhagavatam ki jaya, Srila Prabhupada ki jaya.